Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Tuesday, January 18th, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekdays from 9 to 10 a.m. We then re-air the program from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KJLL. On today's show, a newsmaker interview with Pima Community College Chancellor Dr. Roy Flores. We'll have a conversation with Tucson-based writer Tom Miller. Mr. Miller is just back from Cuba. Then our arts and culture contributor Dr. Mark Sublett with a special guest composer Larry Kanzler. By now, just about everybody in America has heard of Tucson shooting suspect Jared Loughner's troubled past with Pima Community College, where he attended from 2007 to 2010, when the school suspended him after he made rambling statements in a video while walking on campus. Statements like, "I'm in a terrible place, I'm going to be homeless because of the school," and so on and so forth. The Wall Street Journal interviewed mental health experts, and those experts say the release of documents detailing how Pima responded to the incidents involving Loughner largely showed the school acting diligently while underscoring the limits of its capabilities and responsibilities. Documents released to the Wall Street Journal cover a series of disruptive incidents and run-ins with Pima campus police leading up to Mr. Loughner's suspension in September, including the moment when he asked, "Why don't we just strap bombs to babies?" after a poem was read in class. Citing the continual criminal investigation as well as federal privacy rules, Pima said it cannot comment on specifics of Mr. Loughner's history. However, we will be able to talk generally with Pima Community College Chancellor Dr. Roy Flores. Dr. Flores joins us now here in studio on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Flores, good to see you.
Good to see you, Bill.
Counseling is available at Pima Community College, is it not?
It is indeed. Excuse me. It is indeed. We have, of course, counselors on staff. Each of the campuses has counselors. We also have advisors who are not, by the way, trained counselors. They advise people about curriculum and things such as that. We also have an employee assistance program. We have access to counselors, and we had counselors the very next day when people showed up to work. And we'll have counselors through EAP at each of the campuses for the students who are, this is their first day of class this morning. So we do have counseling, and a lot of people turn to counseling. It's not just in circumstances such as this, but if people are having financial problems or marital problems or just stressed out for whatever reason, we've been making that service available at the college for many, many years.
What can you tell us generally about this experience that Pima has undergone over these terrible last 10 or 11 days?
Well, first of all, my condolences to the families and the friends of everyone who was affected by this tragedy. And one of the things that I see that's very positive is the communities coming together, and people are seeing that throughout, not only around the country, but throughout the world. And it makes me feel good to be a community member here in Tucson, to be part of the Tucson community. As far as a retrospective, I haven't had a chance to do that. We're still dealing with many situations in the aftermath. But it's fair to say that those who have examined the actions taken by the college have said we did exactly what we could within the limits of the law and privacy rights and everything else. So I feel good about that. I also feel good about the fact that we kept the 70-some thousand students, faculty members, and several thousand faculty and staff members safe, and that's something one has to feel good about. I think as this plays out, not only here but around the nation, we're going to have to examine every piece of the connections, relationships between students and organizations as well. What I don't want us to do, taking a page from the president, is to do the what-if game. You know, some people were saying if we kept this individual in school, perhaps that wouldn't have happened. Others were saying that if we had violated some rights or a law, perhaps, and insisted that he seek counseling, or ensure that he saw counseling before we actually suspended him. What can you guess about that? Would that have triggered a tragic event at one of our campuses? So,
the Monday morning quarterbacking is very difficult in a case like this, isn't it?
It certainly is. I think what we have to do is look at everything, and then take it from there. But I'm glad things worked out for the college in the sense that people there are safe.
How's the morale at the college? You say actually is today the first day of the new semester.
Well, everyone at the college is sad because we, each of us in our own way, knew Gabby. And of course,
well, she's been a big supporter of Pima Community College and, of course, the University of Arizona and higher education generally in the state.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gabe Zimmerman's father works at the college. So for us, you know, it's pretty hard.
Let's talk about a difficult situation as far as the funding for Pima Community College and the university system generally. The governor has pretty much said that there will be some drastic cuts this year.
Well, for us, it's astonishing. Friday, I got the news that the governor's budget was out, and she's proposing that community colleges be cut by 65%. And I haven't had a chance to get with staff and examine the specific consequences of a budget such as that. But generally, I can tell you this, that it's a game changer. It changes the relationship between the state and community colleges, because community colleges in this state, in Arizona and other states, were founded on the idea that the students would pay a third or a portion, local taxpayers in some way a portion, and then the state a portion. And now, just a back-of-the-napkin estimate, if this goes through, then the state's portion of our needed revenue is going to be 3%. So I think the people need to understand that we're going to have to, we can no longer have open admissions community colleges. The nature of community colleges in Arizona's got to change. We can't just simply accept everybody and then put in a lot of resources in order to get them up to college level speed, and that's been successful in the past. We won't have the resources.
So this three-legged funding stool would be changed dramatically. The whole equation would change if this were to go through. You would say there would only be about 3% state funding for community colleges.
Right.
And that's a huge cut then for you. Money-wise, what are we talking about?
Well, we're talking well over close to $9 million that we'd have to come up with right away. Let me give you an order of magnitude as to cost. That would mean that we'd be getting, I think, somewhere around between $400 and $500 per full-time equivalent student. It cost us $18,000 a year to educate a nurse. So the disparity is just enormous, and the occupational programs for us, for every college, are more expensive. Right now, people who are getting laid off, they don't want to transfer to the university. They already have bachelor's and master's degrees. They want to learn a trade or learn enough so that they can get back on their feet and get back in the job market. That's in jeopardy.
You're almost getting to the point where there'll be zero funding from the state of Arizona for community colleges. Are we getting very close, perilously close to that point?
Well, I think so. We're going to do the best we can with the resources we have. But the conversation, I think, that really needs to take place is what is the role of public higher education in Arizona, and how are we going to pay for it? If the public says there is no role for higher education or public higher education, that we should all be privatized, then the legislators need to know that. If, in fact, the people say, no, we do want to have affordable public education funded with tax dollars, then the legislators need to know that as well. And we do, too, so we can make plans.
We're speaking with Pima Community College Chancellor Dr. Roy Flores. This is the Buckmaster Show on KJLL. Dr. Flores, what's your enrollment situation? Has that been pretty steady over the years? You're at what enrollment now? Is it 68,000?
We'll probably be around 72,000. Last year it grew by about 11%. Our pace this year is about 7%. So our enrollment's increasing. We're not. It won't be more than that next year because the cuts are so enormous. We'll have to limit enrollment. There's no question.
And would that be the first time that you'd had to limit the enrollment?
I think so. I'm not sure that we're going to set an absolute limit. I think the very fact that we're going to have to change entrance requirements as well as not offer as many programs and courses, that will be the limiting factor.
How about the collaboration with the University of Arizona? That's been going on a few years now.
It has, you know, and that's been very, very successful. Interestingly, that the governor's goal and the state's goal, really, is to increase the number of baccalaureate degrees, and the universities, rightfully so, are relying on community colleges to produce more transfer students, something like 16,000 more transfer students with a lot less money. That you can throw that plan out the window. It's not going to happen. We can say it's going to happen, but the reality is it's dead.
What action now, proaction, will you take? How will you be proactive? I'm sure you'll be trying to lobby the governor and the state lawmakers to show them how difficult this particular cut would be.
Yes, we're hoping, that is, the community college presidents are hoping to meet with the governor and find out the logic, if we can, or the thinking behind it. And we recognize that the state's in a financial bind. There's no doubt about that. But we think that 65% cut in one fell swoop is something that's going to be more harmful in the long run than not.
This comes on top of other cuts.
Oh, yes. We've had a 30% cut already, so.
Give me some kind of a chronology here about when did all of this cutting begin, and what has been the net result?
Well, the cutting began, you'll recall, when the economy
tanked out.
But actually, the cutting began before that because Arizona was having some difficulty balancing the budget. And then when the economy tanked, thank goodness for the stimulus package, that helped smooth it out a little bit and alleviate some of the pain. But I recognize that the state's in a real financial bind. I don't know how much it would benefit the state to cut us 65% rather than 20% like the universities, because they're not giving us that much money. It won't make that much difference, but it, at the same time, I think, might cause more unintended harm than what would be necessary.
Let's go back here in the remaining couple of minutes. I think we're down to only about 3 minutes left as we speak with Dr. Roy Flores, the Chancellor of Pima Community College. One of the questions I've been asking all my guests since this terrible Tucson tragedy, just some personal thoughts about how you believe Tucson now moves forward in this healing process. What's the next step as far as you're concerned?
Well, you know, I'm not a seer, so I really don't know what the next step is.
But how do we heal?
I think the way we heal is to continue to reach out to each other, and I believe that's the way to go. I also think that we ought not to be so critical of each other. I think we ought to just take to heart the lessons we give our kids when we send them to kindergarten and say, treat other people respectfully, listen to them. You don't necessarily have to agree with them, but they're not the enemy. And I think that would be helpful. Words hurt and words incite. I'm not saying that had any direct impact on the tragedy, but as far as healing is concerned, a nice word or kind word goes a long way, and I think this ugliness that we are seeing not only here but throughout the nation, it has to stop. It really has to, and have the whole nation heal.
Community counselors, you said, would be coming to Pima, I think you said today, right?
They've been there all week last week, and they're coming today because it's the first day of class, and they'll be there for the students.
And if we have some students, and I hope we do, who may be listening to the program right now, these people are easy to access at the campuses?
Go to the student services area, and we'll help you.
So your hope then for this semester would be perhaps the governor and the state lawmakers will think twice about such a large cut aimed at the community college system. And a quick follow-up to that, why did the universities take a lesser cut while it seems like the community colleges are taking three times the hit? Do you have any idea?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? I don't know.
We're going to leave it right there. Maybe we'll find out the answer to the question soon. Dr. Roy Flores, Pima Community College Chancellor, thank you so much for being on the Buckmaster Show. Good luck to you and the faculty and all of the students and everyone associated with Pima Community College.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery. I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com. Coming up on 25 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show on KJLL and BuckmasterShow.com. Now on the Buckmaster Show live line, State Representative Daniel Patterson from Tucson is on our Buckmaster Show live line. Representative Patterson, good to talk with you.
Good morning, Bill, and good morning to everyone out there listening.
Tell me about the mood at the state legislature in this week two of the Arizona session.
Well, I think a lot of us feel like it's time to stop the name-calling and finger-pointing and really work to heal this state. We've got to do better on this front. We must. And how we work together, what we do, is going to have a lasting impact on all of us. And let's get our schools funded. Let's make sure that people who are sick get the care they need. Let's protect the middle class and make sure that we hold state government accountable to we the people, and let's do it in a dignified and respectful manner. That's certainly how I'm trying to conduct my business here at the Capitol.
Representative, are you sensing there's a different tone to the legislature, at least here initially, in everyone is talking about civility? Have you seen some examples, or are you just hopeful at this point?
I have seen some examples. Last Monday, all of us were still in shock about the shootings related to Representative Giffords, and of course we continue to pray and hope for a full recovery for Gabby. I was pleased, and I want to thank the Speaker of the House, my friend Kirk Adams, for kind of changing the setup. Normally, the opening day of the legislature is a big celebration, and there's still things to celebrate, but I thought that Speaker Adams did a nice job setting the tone. He gave a very appropriate speech about our need to work together and how the tragic shootings had affected him. And I also appreciated the tone of Governor Brewer and the way that she handled things on opening day. The real question is, will this last? I think there is a better feeling right now. There is more of a feeling of respect and togetherness at the Capitol. The real question is, will it last? And another big part of the question is, will our friends in the media also be a part of it or not? So we're trying. I know that I'm trying here at the Capitol to have a more respectful tone, while at the same time acknowledging we have very real policy differences. I don't think the disagreements are going to go away at the Capitol in Phoenix, but the way we handle them may be a little bit different.
So what is on the agenda right now? The budget, is that priority number one?
I think the budget is the biggest priority. We've got to get a real balanced budget. I'm just starting to dig into detail today to the governor's budget proposal. Of course, the legislature will take that and put together our own proposal. It's our job to pass the budget, but the governor has handed us a document. I'm worried about things like a $67 million additional cut to the University of Arizona. I share the concern of my friend Chancellor Flores about the big cuts to Pima Community College and the possibility of removing as many as 280,000 people from health care. I don't think that's going to help our economy. And number one responsibility we have, I think, is to build a strong 21st century economy in Arizona and create good paying jobs. And we know that quality education is directly related to our economic well-being and our quality of life. So I'm just starting to consider in detail the governor's budget proposal, but it's clear we have a lot of hard work to do at the Capitol. We've got to do that carefully on the budget. There's not really any good options, but I think there's some options that are better than others, and that's going to be the priority, I think, especially in the early part of the legislative session that we're just starting now to get into this week.
We've got about a minute left. We're just speaking with, as you mentioned, Chancellor Flores of Pima Community College. He was articulating the devastating effect that a 65% cut would have on Arizona's community college system. That does seem very dramatic.
Well, I think it does, and we know that Pima Community College, we know that community colleges across Arizona are critical entry points into higher education. And again, we know that making sure that education is better supported, that people have better access to affordable and quality education like what's provided by Pima Community College, it's critical to Arizona being able to diversify our economy, bring in better paying jobs, and improve our quality of life. So I am not sure that that's the right place to cut. We need to look at things like how much we're spending on private prisons. We need to look at other ways to make government more efficient. I think we need to look at some of the giant special interest tax loopholes in the tax code, which mean often corporations are getting a break while we're not. So we're trying to create a fair budget.
Thank you.
Here at the Capitol. We've got our work cut out for us.
State Representative Daniel Patterson, we will talk often with you as this session progresses. Thank you for being on the Buckmaster Show today.
Thank you, Bill, and I hope everybody will keep an eye on what's going on here at the Capitol. We need everybody to be involved and keep an eye on us.
Thank you very much. We will do so. Coming up on 30 minutes past the hour, CNN is next. This is the Buckmaster Show.
Tucson's Jolt. Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Police have gone to the Port-au-Prince Hotel where Haiti's former dictator, Baby Doc Duvalier, is staying, but he's not been arrested so far. He surprisingly returned to the country after 25 years in exile. Thousands of people were killed and tortured while Duvalier was president. At least 60 people were killed in a bombing today in Saddam Hussein's hometown of Tikrit. CNN's Jomana Karashe tells us what happened.
About 300 would-be recruits were standing outside this police recruitment center in Tikrit waiting to apply for jobs when a suicide bomber with a suicide vest got among the crowd and detonated the vest.
President Obama will talk about trade, military, North Korea, and human rights with China's leader. President Hu Jintao will be arriving in Washington later today. Democratic Senator Kent Conrad of North Dakota announced today he will not run for re-election in 2012. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Don't ignore your prostate health. See your doctor for checkups and call for a free bottle of Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate has plant sterols shown to support healthy urine flow and healthy sleeping habits. New customers can get a free bottle of Beta Prostate. You only pay shipping and handling. Call 1-800-747-0319. Call now and try Beta Prostate for free. Call 1-800-747-0319. That's 1-800-747-0319.
Intuit Small Business presents Clarity in 30 Seconds. To see exactly where your business stands, just open Intuit QuickBooks and click on Reports. Hit the Profit and Loss tab. And there you have it, the bottom line, literally. All your income and expenses made clear, with enough time left over to give myself a crew cut. Goodbye, home perm. Try Intuit QuickBooks online free for 30 days at Intuit.com. We do the legwork so you can do what you love. Intuit. Small business rejoice.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroMorePizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Coming up on 35 minutes past the hour, the San Francisco Chronicle calls Tucson-based writer Tom Miller one of our best nonfiction writers. Mr. Miller has authored many books, including On the Border, The Panama Hat Trail, Trading with the Enemy, A Yankee Travels Through Castro's Cuba, Jack Ruby's Kitchen Sink, which won the Lowell Thomas Award for Best Travel Writing in 2001, How I Learned English, and his most recent book, The Revenge of the Saguaros. Tom has edited two compilations, Traveler's Tales Cuba and Writing on the Edge, A Borderlands Reader. Mr. Miller has just returned from a week in Cuba, where he led a dozen or so Americans on a literary tour of Cuba. Tom Miller joins us now on the Buckmaster Show in studio. Glad you had a good trip.
Well, thanks for inviting me on my first day back.
Your first day back after the trip to Cuba. You were in Cuba when the horrible news broke in Tucson, or were you at the Tucson airport ready to leave?
I was at the Miami airport getting on the charter to Havana, and the news came across the CNN monitor at the airport. I immediately called a journalist friend here in Tucson who really couldn't tell me more than CNN could. And so I used one of the lobby computers in the Presidente Hotel to keep up on what was happening. I got on the internet probably half hour every day, cranked up different websites to learn what I could.
It's extraordinary that Fidel Castro actually made a statement about Tucson, Arizona, and the tragedy. What did Mr. Castro say, in effect?
Well, now that he's out of power, he writes a weekly column for the daily newspaper called Reflexiones, Reflections. And the guy is slightly loopy these days, but every now and then he says something of interest. He knows no more than the rest of us know, but here's a good example. The deed was the work of an unbalanced person intoxicated by the hatred reigning in the United States society, where the fascist Tea Party group has imposed its extremism on the Republican Party. So he goes on and on about that. But the most interesting part was, I do not harbor the slightest doubt that the victims were deserving of the recognition of the president, as were the citizens of Tucson, the university students, and the doctors.
Kudos from Mr. Castro to
Fidel
Tucson.
Castro to the citizens of Tucson.
Yeah. Tell us about the literary tour that you were just conducting.
Well, you know, there is a travel embargo, although that has been weakened somewhat, and we'll talk about that in a minute. There are some loopholes, and we jumped through those loopholes. The regulations are run by an obscure Treasury Department agency. And as professional researchers, I was able to gather up a dozen people under the heading Literary Havana, and we visited publishing houses. We talked with authors. We went to the homes of poets for mixers. We really had a very wide-ranging activity. We went to some Santeria, Afro-Cuban ceremonies. And as I said, we met with a number of important people in the theater and the literary world.
Trading with the Enemy came out when? That book has been reprinted now numerous times, hasn't it?
A number of times. Initial book came out at the end of 1992. Then there was a paperback in 95. And each time there's a new paperback edition, I put a new introduction on it. The most recent one was just 2 years ago.
Has much changed?
Yes. There has been a great deal of change, and of course there's always hope for a lot more change. The downside is that the change could be for the worse. But as it stands now, the economy, what's happened in Cuba over the last 50 years has never happened before anywhere, and it will never happen again. It's a one-of-a-kind situation. And so when something works, they hold on to it, and they exploit it, and they develop it. And when something doesn't work, they jettison it. And so as a result, they're kind of winging it in a sense. As much as they talk about five-year plans and the Communist Party and this and that, they're really winging it.
How so?
Well, for example, the ration system. That went into effect 2 or 3 years after the Castro government took power. And then it was supposed to be a very temporary stopgap, and then it became the only way for people to get food and produce and goods and clothing and articles for the household. But after a while, these things were not enough, and so people had to resort to the black market. The black market really was the only functioning end of the economy. The national economy was having troubles. The sugar industry, the mills really haven't been repaired since Batista left town. And so as a result, the black market really dominated what was going on. And what's happening now is that the government is licensing and turning the black market into the white market. All the things that had been illegal, they're now taxing and licensing so they can reap the profits.
We're speaking with writer Tom Miller, who is based here in Tucson, but has written extensively and traveled extensively to Cuba. Tom, the Miami Herald this past Friday had a story that the Obama administration said it will allow for more U.S. travel to Cuba. What's your take on that?
Oh, that can be nothing but beneficial for both sides, really. Under the Clinton years, there was a program called People to People, in which educational groups, nonprofit groups, were encouraged to get licenses from this obscure Treasury agency and to travel to Cuba to meet with Cubans, perhaps to pass on money, perhaps to pass on goods or even books or CDs, anything you want to bring and give people, they were encouraging that. Now, what happened, of course, under Bush was that these educational trips were no longer legal, and actually, both sides suffered because not only were they educational, they were cultural, they were academic. We learned a lot more about Cuba. It was information we could teach people in schools. Now, Obama has just reversed the Bush policy, and we're back to where Clinton was. So nonprofit educational groups can now get licenses to travel to Cuba. I suspect there's going to be a big backlog of applications, and there's a lot of back office work to get seats on the official charter flights that go out of Miami. One extra thing happened was that the new Obama regulations allow any airport to fly from its home base to Havana. So there may well be a charter from Los Angeles to Havana, as there was under Clinton.
When will the travel restrictions be eased completely? Look into your crystal ball.
Oh, gosh. You know, making predictions about Cuba is the fastest way to lose credibility. Every prediction about Cuba for the last 50 years has been wrong. However, having put my credibility on the line, I don't think that the complete travel restrictions will be lifted until there's considerable change within Cuba, and I think it'll probably be, it'll go hand in hand with changes in the commercial embargo.
Everyone likes to speculate on Fidel Castro's health. What is the latest that you're hearing, the latest rumor?
That he's okay, not great. He's, you know, he's approaching his mid-80s, although you know, both his parents were from the area of Spain where people live to be long, you know, be long in the tooth, as it were. And so Fidel is seen around town every now and then. He's been informal, impartial. He's been seen around not with government people, but with visitors from other countries. He lives in a house out in the Siboney area of Havana with his family. And he's recovered pretty much from the botched surgery, which put him in so much pain and agony a number of years ago.
Okay, we've been speaking with Tom Miller, writer based here in Tucson, a good friend of the Buckmaster Show. And Tom, we'll look forward to having you on the week of the Tucson Festival of Books in March. You'll be one of the presenters, as will I, and we'll talk about the book festival.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Tom.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Next up on the Buckmaster Show, we bring in another of our Buckmaster Show contributors, The entire long list of contributors is on our website, buckmastershow.com. Dr. Mark Sublett, who owns the Medicine Man Gallery in Tucson and in Santa Fe, will be covering arts and culture for us on a monthly basis. We welcome Mark and his guest today, Larry Kanzler, an American composer, arranger, conductor, musical director, and pianist. Over a lengthy career, he's collaborated with Kenny Rogers, Lionel Richie, Roger Miller, Jackson 5, the Smothers Brothers, and Michael Martin Murphy, who together with Murphy composed the pop hit Wildfire, which sold over 5 million copies. Mr. Kanzler resides here in Arizona and California. Larry, thank you for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Mark, it's good to see you. Thank you very much for bringing.
Not a problem. I'm glad I'm here. I didn't actually realize Larry was this gifted. That's amazing, Larry.
I
just thought you collected art.
Where did you meet Larry?
Collecting art in my gallery. Well, no, that's not true.
Yeah, tell us the truth. We actually met at the gym.
That's true.
Oh, really?
Yeah, on dueling exercise bikes, I guess.
What kind of art do you like, Larry?
Well, I sound like I'm plugging Mark, but
he never gives me a discount.
So
that's true. No discounts ever.
Now, make sure you give a very good plug for Mark here.
Oh,
the Medicine Man.
Well, I love Southwest art, and I used to read Southwest Art magazine when I first moved to Tucson and discovered Ed Mell's work and fell in love with it. And one day I just looked at the bottom of the ad and noticed that the gallery was a block from where I lived and went in and just started enjoying the artwork and just really fell in love with it.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting when we were sitting on the gym bikes, and he had become a client of mine, and we were talking, and Larry goes, you know what? I have this kind of idea I want to do. I want to write a script, an original music for Ed Mell's paintings. And I was like, wow, that's really unique. I don't think anybody's done that. And so we did it, and maybe Larry, you could just share. I mean, it was very, very fun to do.
Well, I kind of got the idea. It had been stuck in my head, in the back of my head, for quite some time. When I would score movie scores in Los Angeles, as the conductor, the orchestra's watching me, and I'm looking at the back of the soundstage, and I'm looking at the screen so I can see the action of the cue that I just wrote to make sure that everything's in sync and everything. So once I'd go through it once or twice and make sure that everything was working, then we'd record it. And at that point, I'm just kind of, the orchestra's watching me. But at that point, a trained SEAL could conduct the orchestra because they've already figured it out. And by this time, I'm just kind of enjoying watching the action of the film to the music. And I always thought, wow, that would make quite a show in itself, just, seeing an orchestra play with the live action behind them. So that kind of started the idea.
I want to talk, Mark, a little bit about Wildfire. It's one of my favorite songs.
I don't remember it, actually. I was too young.
Were
I'm
you
sorry.
Too young? I don't know.
No, not true.
Rosemary Brandt, our producer, is going to play a little bit. Hey, maybe some royalty rights here
there
for Larry.
Go.
Okay, let's hear a little
bit
of Wildfire.
When there came a killing frost, and the pony she named Wildfire busted down a stall. In a blizzard, she was lost. She ran calling Wildfire, calling Wildfire.
And as I sing along to that song, I think, that's one of those songs, Larry, the first time you hear it, you just never forget it. Give us a little bit of the history. How'd that song come about with Michael Martin Murphy, and what's Michael doing these days?
Well, it started, Michael and I were both songwriters for Screen Gems. We were staff writers back in the starving hippie days, and we were $100 a week wonders, and all we did was write songs, and went, wow, this is a great job. I was doing the same thing for free, and then somebody decided to pay me. And it was a pretty prolific period for both of us. We wrote quite a bit. Matter of fact, during that period, we wrote an 18-song rock opera for Kenny Rogers in the first edition called The Ballad of Calico. So we were really cranking them out then. And Murphy had this idea that he'd always want to put down based on a legend, evidently, that comes from the Midwest about a horse that comes out. And anyway, it just sort of evolved. And next thing we knew, I recorded a demo for Warner Brothers, and it did so well that no one touched it for 6 years.
Wow.
Murphy recorded it, and it was an instant hit, so that took care of my singing career, too.
Well, you told me a funny story, and of course, I do remember the song. Unfortunately, I was old enough. And but how you were driving along in L.A.
Yeah. Yeah, it was on KRLA, which was the big top 40 station at the time.
And rock and roll, yeah.
The rock and roll, you know, hit bound, you know. So I was on the freeway coming home, and all of a sudden they turned it on, and I was listening to it, and they got to the chorus. And I looked over, and there was a carload of high school girls next to me, and I noticed that their mouths were mouthing to the song Wildfire, and I just erupted in goosebumps. I'm like, oh, my God, this is a hit. It really hit me. So.
What year was that the song was released?
It was released in 75.
And how is Mr. Murphy doing?
He's doing very well. He does.
Does he live up in Santa Fe? Or?
I haven't talked to him in quite some time, but he did for quite a while, and he did those West festivals, and he's really a proponent of the traditional cowboy music genre, and I think he's done very well in it.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting, Larry. You know, you're such a gifted artist, and I think people would find it interesting. I know I did when you started to tell me about your career in the early 70s with the commercials, because, you know, most people, I think sometimes they don't think about the commercial music, but obviously you did, because there was a period in time you wrote like 800 commercials.
What?
Yeah, I never slept for three years.
800? Any that we might remember?
We did everything. As a matter of fact, the one that they still play all the time, the song, is the In and Out Burger song. I'm proud of that. My friend Gary White wrote the lyrics. And we literally did everything. We did all the airlines, we did McDonald's, we did Pepsi, Coke, you name it, you know.
With the creative process, it's always interesting, somebody who can turn out hundreds of commercials like that, and each one to sound different and a different theme.
Well, I know you were sharing with me about the little Monday Night Football. It's Monday Night Football and the Larry Kanzler commercial hour.
Yeah, my partner at the time, Don Pyshrip, and I, that's back when Monday Night Football was really the big show. And to get anything played on there was a big deal. And we caught the last 2:30 seconds of one of the breaks, and we were excited about that. And the next two-minute break came up, and we had all four spots. Wow, we made it. So it's a good feeling.
Turn it out very quickly. Talk about some of the, we mentioned as I was introducing Larry Kanzler, you talked about Kenny Rogers, the Jackson 5 early in the whole Jackson thing.
Yeah, I was their musical director for their first Las Vegas show.
Michael, really?
Yeah, Michael was 16, and Janet made her stage debut. She was 7 at the time, so... That was one. We were at the MGM Grand, and I wrote the show and conducted the orchestra.
What year was that, Larry?
Oh, boy. 75, 76, somewhere in there.
And when did you move to Tucson?
10 years ago.
And why Tucson?
I ran out of gas on the way to Dallas. No, my mother-in-law lives here, and my wife and I decided to get out of L.A. while the getting's good, and we came here, and we love it.
Well, you know, Larry, we're kind of harping back on all the things you've done in the past, but the realities of it is you're still an active composer. You've got a great website. I know I've been to it. It's LarryKanzler.com, where you can download his music.
And yeah, that's Kanzler, LarryKanzler.com. What kind of work are you doing right now? What's interesting you now?
I'm in the midst of a project that I'm writing for the Hollywood Film Chorale, which is a group of studio singers put together by my friend Sally Stevens. It's a 50-voice choir, and I've composed a piece called Cowboy Americana, where I'm taking all the traditional cowboy songs and putting them in sort of an extended suite. It's pretty exciting. We're going to do a read-through in the next month or so.
What kind of Western art resonates with you? Is Maynard Dixon one of your favorites?
Absolutely.
You're required to say that, of course.
Yes, the home of Maynard Dixon.
Yes, Maynard Dixon has a very
standard.
Nice home over at Mark Sublett's Medicine Man Gallery. I mean, Mark probably has as much Dixon as probably any gallery in the world?
We have a museum, actually, the Maynard Dixon Museum, and there's probably 100 different artifacts in fact, getting back to Larry, he did a program. He wrote, an original script for Maynard Dixon images, which we're going to do a whole, not only the songs to the paintings, but also a little documentary as well. So Larry is very into Maynard Dixon.
What is it about Dixon that resonates with you? And I know you also are very much into Ed Mell's work. Talk a little bit about that.
To me, I haven't really analyzed the feeling, except it just captures the openness of the West, which I've always been in love with. I grew up in Texas, down on the Houston Ship Channel, surrounded by oil refineries, and to look out and see mountains and cactus, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and Ed Mell's work, pretty dramatic, a lot of his work.
Well, I love the sky. I was a private pilot for years, flew gliders and things like that, and you become very aware of the sky, and he just puts it into a dimension that I've never seen.
Mark, we're quickly running out of time, but I do want to mention, before we hear from you again in February, you have a program, a show opening up about Navajo blankets.
Yeah, we do, actually.
And I think that's launching February the 5th.
That's correct. It's going to open at noon, so it's kind of a fun time so everyone can come. And it's going to be my first blanket show in about 10 years, and we're going to have about 100 old Navajo blankets with chief's blankets and some really amazing pieces. And we're lucky because Ray Roberts has done some commissions where he's taken the blankets and actually used them for his paintings. So it's called Masters of the Loom, and it will open February the 5th. So please do come by.
And that show will be up through May the 5th. Are you into Navajo blankets, Larry?
No, but my wife is.
thank you.
Yeah, indeed.
Come and spend a lot of money.
Oh, Mark's. Yeah, Mark already knows that one. So.
Gentlemen, I think I'm going to throw Rose a curve here and take us out. Can you take us out with a little more of Wildfire? Or no, you can't. We don't have it all queued up.
Could we just sing it?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
No. So, Larry, it's been a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you.
When will that project be ready that you are working on?
Well, because we're going to do a read-through in a month or so, and then that'll determine when we're going to add a narrative to it. So I'd say in 6 months or so.
Okay. And Mark Sublett, it's always a pleasure seeing you.
Thanks. Well, 1 month, we'll talk again.
Okay, we will. Mark Sublett and Larry Kanzler have been talking with us on The Buckmaster Show. We want to talk a little bit about some of the upcoming shows that we have on The Buckmaster Show. This Friday, we will be talking with John Petticone. He is the new TUSD superintendent, and there'll be a lot to talk about that there on the Friday Roundtable on the Air. We'll be talking with Mr. Petticone, and then we'll also be bringing in our Reporters Roundtable. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of Team Buckmaster, our producer, Rosemary Brandt, and our marketing director, Deborah Howard, I am Bill Buckmaster wishing you a great day.
Something on your mind?
The time has come for all of us to speak out.
Call in and let us know.
Now start talking.
Talk about how you feel.
KJLL, South Tucson.